seismic change in our society and culture. And the second is that we're all in this together. Often when educators don't know exactly what to do, they give a quiz. And I haven't had a chance to do that. I've been retired for about a year. So we're going to start with a quiz. There's only one question, and you don't need to write it down. But the question is, what do the following people have in common? Senator Orrin Hatch, Rabbi Michael Lerner, Bryant Gumbel, Imam Hamza Abdul Malik, Reverend Kevin W. Cosby, Monsignor Harry Kriegel, Bill Clinton, Chief Sidney Hill of the Onondaga Nation, Billy Crystal. Any thoughts? Well, yeah, they're all men. That's part of the problem, but anyway, I'll get to that in a minute. They were all eulogists at the funeral of Muhammad Ali. So we had ministers, rabbis, priests, a Jewish comic, a black TV personality, Iroquois and Buddhist spiritual leaders, and white politicians, both Republican and Democrat, one of whom was born in the segregated South. They came together under one roof to honor an African-American Muslim. It was a remarkable event. And I think the Martin Buber quote on the front of today's handout emphasizes its remarkableness. Because we live in an era and a culture where fomenting fear of the other, for hearkening back to a supposedly simpler and better time, characterizes an alarming volume of our public discourse. And as we heard last Sunday, we need enemies, and we have such a wide array to choose from. Of course, we know better. We don't need enemies. We need partners. And we have partners. We have lots of them. Because we really are all more similar than we typically recognize. There is general... Should I use the hand mic, do you think? Would that be better? Are we struggling?
I might do it. The dot's facing out.
Is that better? Okay. There is general agreement in the scientific community that every person on the face of the earth alive today shares one common ancestor who lived in East Africa between 100 and 200,000 years ago, and that all Homo sapiens share about 99.9% of our DNA. Now, as a point of comparison, the DNA of the fruit fly varies 10 times more than ours. And part of the reason is we're a comparatively young species. The fruit fly has been around a lot longer. So, I mean, we all know a little bit about genetics, right? We share about 50% of our genes with each of our parents, about 25% with each of our grandparents, and so on. So if you go back seven generations, our relatedness to that seventh great whatever grandparent amounts to just over 0.75% of our DNA. So take any two of us, or take yourself and any stranger you select at random from any crowd anywhere on the face of the earth, and no matter how different we look in skin color, eye color, hair color, height, weight, or any other physical attributes, we probably share about the same amount of DNA as a genealogical fifth cousin. The point, of course, is that there's no such person as other. There's a wonderful Hebrew phrase that sort of invokes the idea of God's spirit. It's called Ruach Elohim. And that Ruach Elohim resides in each and every one of us. But we forget that too easily and too often, and we focus on those things that can pull us apart rather than on those things, excuse me, which bind us together. I stand before you today as a straight, white, male Christian. That is the holy quadfecta of entitlement in late 20th century America. Now, I can look around and look at my entitlement as being under siege as I see the nation is growing more sexually, racially, and religiously diverse with every day that passes. And there are those that embrace any opportunity to channel those fears that I might have of this besiegement into hate and violence. Just last Sunday, there was an AP report regarding an upsurge in activities of the Ku Klux Klan. In interviews with the Associated Press, Klan leaders said they feel the U.S. politics are going their way as a nationalist us-against-them mentality deepens across the nation. And membership has gone up at the twilight of President Obama's second term. It's easy to name the manifestations of these fears. Xenophobia, racism, sexism. But it seems to me that they share the same root causes, which if you just distill them down, they amount to a looming sense of lost identity, a fear of losing that ephemeral thing we call home. Because home can be an idea as well as a place. Home is who we are, the values we share, the traditions we practice, the one flag which we all pledge allegiance to, especially during the last week. And home is changing. And change is unsettling. And it's often unwelcome. And whom can we blame for those unwelcome changes? Well, of course, it's those we lump together as different and label as enemies. There is, in many circles, appeal to images of the good old days. Never mind that those old days weren't so good if you were a person of color, or gay, or female, or of a faith tradition other than Christian. We really are, I think, at a crossroads today, both as an unsustainable society and in the ultimate evolution of our species. We can kill each other with chilling efficiency. A couple of wrong military moves could wipe out life as we know it. We can continue to pollute our environment to the point where our habitat is no longer habitable. Stripped to its essentials, I think our central human task in the 21st century is that of reorganizing society somehow to promote the survival of our species and to help with the development of what really are our unique potentials. It comes down to continuing what has been a century-long expansion of what we mean when we talk about human rights. Now, believe it or not, I'm going to suggest that the first major step in the modern human rights movement occurred 800 years ago. It was aimed at the top portion of the hierarchical pyramid, and that was the successful challenge of the divine right of kings to rule. I think we're living in the middle of the second major step in that process, and that is the challenge of the divine right of males to rule. And so we can expect some pretty strong pushback. I think we're seeing it. The thing is,
thank you.
It's those qualities which are often derisively branded as feminine, which are most wanting in so much of our public life. Cooperation rather than competition. Linking rather than ranking. Partnering rather than dominating. Much of current feminist philosophy and writing speaks of a new paradigm that is often referred to as post-patriarchal. Now, as I understand this thinking, it doesn't seek to substitute matriarchy or female domination for patriarchy. It seeks to institute full parity between the two halves of humanity in what is often referred to as a partnership society. Now, if this sounds unrealistic or ridiculous, it might interest you to know that recent reinterpretations of archaeological evidence suggest that such societies once existed in what we call prehistories. It's been a long time. This was around 6,000 BCE. Artifacts from digs in old Europe, and particularly on the island of Crete, revealed societies in which power was primarily equated with the responsibilities of nurturing and motherhood, rather than with the exaction of obedience to a male-dominant elite through force or the fear of force. There was a conspicuous absence of emphasis on the technologies of destruction. And, in contrast to other highly developed civilizations of the time, Cretan art does not emphasize or glorify or idealize warfare. In short, the feminine virtues of peaceableness and sensitivity to the needs of others were given social priority. And again, in contrast to other societies, Cretan women had high social, economic, political, and religious positions. though not in a manner which seemed to subjugate or diminish men. So as we profess a desire to move toward a more egalitarian culture in the 21st century, we do have some examples to help guide us. But truly moving in that direction will require discarding some societal norms, which too many are givens. But we begin with the fact that there is no other. Female, male, gay, straight, black, white, we are all in this together. Here's a passage from a recent Leonard Pitts column, which seems apt. Now, you'll note that the words are not entirely his. In a sense, we are bringing forth a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men and women are created equal. If, for some of us, that fires the imagination, it is hardly mysterious that for others it kindles a sense of displacement and loss. There is no instant cure for what has America unsettled. There is only time and the hard work of change. I think we as a community and many of us as individuals are invested in those efforts. And that gives me great hope on this difficult morning. And how do we continue to do the work that needs doing? I will close with some favorite words of tennis great Arthur Ashe, who was born on this date, July 10, 1943. Start where you are. Use what you have. Do what you can. May it be so.